God bless you for bringing the light of the gospel to New York City. Certainly takes vision and sacrifice and a lot of different things. Patience and endurance. We heard about that this morning in the first devotions about taking the gospel takes patience and endurance, and had to parallel that with your efforts here. Seems like you've taken on an impossible mission, but with God all things are possible, and we're thankful that He makes a way. And so I ask you the question this morning, who is God to you? Part of my goals for the new year, I don't know how many of you set New Year's resolutions. Over the years, I've listened to different people in our congregation say, I don't set New Year's resolutions, and I could agree with their sentiment that we don't, use that out of its place. But I had to ask them this New Year's, do you have any goals? And when do you set those goals? And part of my goal, again, this year is to discover who God is. We noticed in our Sunday school lesson that Gideon discovered God in a personal way, and he named God Jehovah Shalom. And studying the different names of God recently, I would encourage you to personally pursue God, who He is, and I believe that He wants to reveal Himself to each of us this morning in a special way. I feel like sometimes we as pastors, and maybe particularly as the Mennonite Church, have erred a little bit on the side of creating a system, and if you fit into this system, will carry you through to heaven. Instead of each man, we are called to pursue God personally on a personal level and to continue that daily pursuit, building our personal altars and worshiping God on a personal level. So I appreciated that coming out in the Sunday school lesson and just wanted to re-underline that for us this morning. We're going to go another drastic direction this morning and not even open our Bibles for a bit to get practical. Sometimes we separate our personal life too much from our spiritual life. And so I don't know, how many phones do we have here this morning? If you have your phone, get your phone out and turn it on. Maybe it's already on. And I don't know if you have Apple or Android or what you might have, but go to your apps. And my question to you this morning is, how many apps are on your phone? And the title this morning is, how many apps does a man need? This title is not original with me, but I heard a short presentation on it and wanted to bring it here this morning because it's something that challenged me and I thought it might challenge you as well. If you go to your home screen, and mine has four wide and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, how many pages of apps, how many apps do you have? If you scroll through those, you know, when I got a phone, I can get Apple Maps or Google Maps and who all knows Waze and whatnot. So I downloaded a number and made the pick of which I thought would work the best. You can get AccuWeather and all different sorts of weather apps as well, and you probably have your preferences. But how many apps do you have on your phone? How many have 1 to 5 apps? 6 to 10? 11 to 15? I'm going to 16 to 30. Got some hands now. Not all visible, there's more than just the visible apps, but we're just talking about the visible today. 31 to 50. I know I switched. 50 to 75, this is approximate. 75 to 100. 100 to 125. 125 to 150. 150 plus. Nobody? Well, I was one of these people that, you know, you try different apps to see which one you want, and it would just keep all three apps, and you go to a show, and they say, download our app to get around, and so you do that, and I was in the 150-plus bracket. I forget what the exact number was, 160 or 70. And so it was something that's pertinent. So I'd like to just discuss this a little bit. How many apps does a man need? Why do we have apps? Think about that. What do apps do for us? What do you do on your phone? Well, there's many different reasons to have apps. We have the weather forecast and their opinions. Of course, they had different opinions about what was going to happen in New York City this weekend. And, of course, we look and see that the sun is shining and there's no fresh snow. But there were apps that were telling us something. Well, I don't know if there were or not, but I think there were at one point. I think there was early in the week. 1 to 3 inches possible, and then it petered out to nothing. So the weather forecast, the news report, the calculator, and there's just a lot of different applications. So we have apps. Number one, why we have apps is the first section of the message. Number one, to increase knowledge. Two, to obtain power. Power to create, power to accomplish. Some of you might have apps to control. Yeah, there was an app when we got our new washing machine that I actually downloaded the app in my curiosity, and I could control my wife's washing machine. Maybe not good control there, but something I could do. You could probably, some of you could turn your oven on or off or adjust your heat with your app. We can use apps to purchase. You can purchase some food, place that order now and go pick it up in a few minutes. You can buy flights and set schedules. You can manage finances, and you can maybe set goals for a weight loss plan and different physical things. We also use apps, thirdly, to communicate. And through apps, we have the ability to cross the miles and speak directly and even see people through video that aren't right in front of us. And so it's a wonderful tool. It's an amazing tool. We have apps for inspiration. We have our Bible. Well, during Sunday school, I used an app on my phone to look up a Hebrew word to see the meaning of it. And it brings inspiration. I guess that goes back to one knowledge. But it's also, we can use apps for entertainment and a lot of other purposes. And as you think about it, many of these apps are things that we pursue as being created in the image of God. Do your pets, I don't know how many of you have pets, but do any of your pets have phones with apps? Can they use them? No, they don't have that ability. We were created in the image of God, and so we use these things because we were even called to, in Genesis. Genesis calls us to control the earth, and in part of our God mission here, and part of that mission is using phones. So creating and having dominion, and many things that we do on our earth journey are accomplished with our phones. So we think a little bit about using our phones as being in pursuit of being who as God is. God is omniscient. He knows everything. And with AI and Google, it's certainly an attempt to pull a lot of knowledge. However, we know that comes up short. Our phone will never be God. God is omniscient. He knows everything. God is all-powerful. He is, we call that omnipotent. And God is omnipresent. He is everywhere present. God does things for his pleasure, and I believe that there is a right pursuit of things that we enjoy, and we call that pleasure. And so it is a truth that in its purity, technology is created, apps are designed to give us power to be like God. And that's not wrong. But we also see in Genesis 3, verse 5, it says that then shall your eyes be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And it is true that with man's fallen nature, we also have the development of technology and apps to pursue the power that challenges and deviates from God's plan. Why does Apple's insignia have an apple with a bite taken out of it? Is there any significance in that? Well, we know that there was the forbidden fruit in Eden that was bitten out of. We don't know for sure that was an apple, but we do know that the nature of man is to deviate from God's plan. The burden of this message is to challenge us to use technology to pursue and honor God, not self or sin. The power of apps. Number one, apps are tools to accomplish goals. Tools to accomplish goals. 86% of people, the moment they wake up, reach for their phone, their smartphone. I don't know where you are in these statistics, but most of us carry it on us and find a certain level of security in it. Can you leave the house without a phone? How many of you would turn around if you left your phone? Most I would. Might depend when you were introduced to a phone. The development of technology is interesting. I remember when I was just a teenager, Joe Ball had a bag phone in his van, and he even had it hooked up to the horn, that when the bag phone would go off, the horn would blow. And I think there was a time when at church, Shirksville didn't have a phone, but Joe Ball had a bag phone in his work vehicle, and he brought that to church so my dad could be notified if he was needed. One time when my mom was expecting, he brought his work van to church so he could have a phone there just in case. And that was part of the development of technology that riveted. So I don't know when you were first introduced to a phone and a cordless phone. More statistics, 80% also check their phone as the last thing they do at night. Another 30% wake up just to check their phone to see if they missed any notification. Yes, we know that apps have the ability to captivate and to control our minds, but the power of apps, it's amazing. We'll look next at the promise of apps. What do apps do for us? 1, 2, 3. Simplify. Apps simplify. They do hard things easily. Things that we can't even physically do for ourselves, they can do for us. I was thinking about it on the way here, how we've come to trust this technology. And you know, God could end the power of the computer instantly with the EMP, and even with the solar flares, he could do just take it out. Electromagnetic pulse and solar power could take out the power of the computer. It could be gone instantly. And so if you don't carry a physical map to know where you're going, you just trust your phone. That could be gone in an instant. And then what? We've built the whole order and process of our life around the phone and the power of the app, and God could take that. Simplify, do hard things easily. Also, to save time, and that kind of goes with the first, but to save time, we use apps to cut time and expense. Well, there's a lot of things that they do, but we also use it to spice up your life. If you're bored, get on some media or social media app and find out the latest news, or connect with people to add diversion. And there's a lot of other things that the apps promise to us of things that they can do. But what do they actually do? I'd like to go for the third, I guess this is the fourth part, the power of the promise, and look at some of the statistics about the negative effects of the smartphone apps on the brain. And science said this. This is not religious people who came up with this list, but as they've done multiple studies, and I believe there's 18 plus studies represented here in my notes, maybe even more than that. I didn't count them all up, but just reference some of those. The negative: smartphones have revolutionized communication and access to information, but extensive research shows they can harm brain function, mental health, and cognitive process. I'll outline the key negative effects supported by scientific evidence from studies, meta-analysis, and expert reviews. These stem from constant notifications, screen time, multitasking, and addictive app designs. While the impacts vary, the consensus from neuroscience and psychology is clear. Excessive use, which is 2 or 3+ hours a day, amplifies risk. I think it's Sunday morning, right about this time, my phone gets a notification of my screen time for the last week. What is that screen? What is that number for you? What does it tell you? I won't ask you how. Are you in the 2 to 3 hours or plus? Number one, what are the negative effects? We have distraction. What is distraction? Reduced attention span and cognitive control. To reduce the attention span and cognitive control, you're trying to do too many things. Yes, developers design apps to trigger notifications, to bombard us. And one of the most annoying things is when you're trying to focus on getting something done and the phone buzzes. And it says, hey, look at me, pick me up. They feed us with, quote, important notification and information, much of which is unimportant. How many times have we set out to accomplish a task and your phone interrupts us, stops us to check it out, and slows us down, or totally puts us on a different path? We're in the middle of a discussion, conversation. We picked up our phone and we went to another one and we totally forgot about and never finished the first objective. How foolish are we when we let our phone tell us what to do? Now, we are told that whether you're male or whether you're female, this might affect you differently. We know that as men, we have more of a one focus to accomplish a certain goal. And as women, they have brains who the two sides of their brains are constantly in interconnection, and they have the ability to multitask much better than we as men have the ability to do. And so they are better at multitasking, and they are not as taken down by this thing of distraction. But there are different studies, and I won't mention all of them. The Ward et al. In 2017, the Firth et al. In 2019, and another one in 2018 that are published different places. You can go read these articles. But the key findings of these were proximity to phone reduces available cognitive capacity by 10 to 20%. Even silent phones impair our focus. And this was, they observed 520 participants, did lab experiments, and their conclusion was that just having a phone close to you can reduce your cognitive capacity by 10 to 20%. Heavy smartphone use is linked to 15 to 25% in sustained attention, distraction, we call it. And that was out of 33 studies of over 100,000 people. They concluded that there is that 15 to 25% decline. Multitasking with apps also shrinks gray matter. The gray matter in your brain is shrunk, and they did the fMRI scans on 4,000 plus users and came up with that. So the real world impact is that if some users check their phones 150 plus times a day, leading to attention residue, where their focus is taken, and it can take them around 23 minutes to regain that focus and get back to what they were doing. And so we see the negative effect of this constant distraction. What else do we have? Well, secondly, we have the dysfunction of impaired memory and learning. How many of you are have this thing called Google Brain. You know, we know where the information is. Years ago, people were trained to remember the information. Today, we don't remember. We just know where to find it. Where is it? It's on our phone or some other device. Relying on phone for storage. It reduces the hippocampal activity for encoding memories. Your hippocampus is a small part of your brain with a big job. It helps turn short-term memory into long-term memories and has a lot to do with your learning and your memory capabilities. We lose those abilities because of Google in our hands and carrying these phones. People remember less if they expect to Google it later. Yes, 3+ hours a day also correlates with 12% smaller hippocampus volume in teens already, and excessive use hinders working memory by 8 to 15%. Students using phones during lectures retain 10 to 20% less, and I don't think any of us have a hard time believing that. Moving on, what's another negative effect? Depression, increased anxiety, and mental health disorders. Social media comparison and FOMO, fear of missing out. Disrupt dopamine regulation, heightening emotional reactivity in the amygdala, another effect of our phones. Smartphone adoption since 2012 doubled teen depression rates, and you can look up the studies and how they came to that conclusion. But it went from 8% to 16%, and my guess is that it's continually on the rise. You know how it is. What do we post on our WhatsApp status? We don't post the big stack of dishes, the before and the after, and the hard work that we're involved in. No, we post the coffees and the great drink that we had, or maybe the trip that we took and the vacation spot with the palm trees. I had the opportunity to be in Key Largo earlier this week doing a delivery, and I enjoyed that. And I pushed back against the urge to post that. I would have loved to, while it's teens and negative temperatures up here, to show Key Largo with the sunshine and just the beauty there, palm trees and sunshine and pleasant temperatures. Yes, it's the same continent, but I realize that that's not always helpful to post those things. But we tend to see the good things, the strengths and the blessings that other people have, and we compare that to the things in front of us, and we are negative, produces negativity. And so sometimes maybe it's not always good to look at other people's status, but sometimes it's also good not to post those things. And I'm not against people posting it, but we certainly can see the effect of depression and increased anxiety and the mental health disorders, the fear of missing out that that creates. Yes, even beyond that, well, in summary, apps distort reality and make us discontent. Posting the best part of our life doesn't necessarily show a balanced picture of what we're really experiencing. Also, what else? Well, we have this thing called sleep disruption, disrupting the circadian rhythm and the ability to experience the needed deep sleep. Yes, we understand that blue light from the screen suppresses the production of melatonin, which is needed for the rest and refreshment and the benefit from sleeping. I don't know if you all heard the presentation about sleep and what's needed, but had that some time ago at church and enjoyed the science of sleep. And you realize that technology has the way of pushing back the balance that God created and the things that we need. The studies and the findings present that briefly here. An hour of pre-bed screen time delays melatonin production by 3 hours. Over 1 to 2 hours use of your phone and technology shortens sleep by 1 hour. If you are a high user of technology, you sleep less. And it's linked to 25% higher insomnia risk. Those are represented from three different studies ranging from 2015 to 2019. Well, three different findings, but actually many, many more studies with over 50,000 participants. And the things that they learned. And so one of the conclusions from those studies is that 60% of adults lose 1+ hour of sleep due to usage of their phones. So regardless of how important the things that we are trying to accomplish on our phones, sometimes we pay consequences for those things that we may not even consider, and they might in some ways obstruct more important things in our lives. What else? Well, we know that apps are addictive, and so number 5 is addiction. The negative effect of apps can be addiction and dopamine dysregulation. Apps are designed to stimulate the brain with high concentrated dose of information and or entertainment, which creates a dopamine rush to stimulate the brain. We're created to operate with a balance which can easily be hijacked with smartphone usage. And once our brain is hooked to this dopamine, our brain just says, go back for more, that rush of information or activity. And so we go back for more stimulation. This morning, if I told you about a drug whose rampant use is affecting many in negative ways, and that most users become quickly addicted and can't resist it for even a short amount of time without serious withdrawal symptoms, and that I have some here and would like to give it to you, but it's going to hook you for the rest of your life, and it's going to have negative effects. How many of you would take that? Would you take that drug? Yes? No? Maybe I already put you to sleep. No, your eyes aren't closed. They're here. But, you know, we wouldn't take those drugs, but how easily would we hand a phone to a teenager and say, here, this will help you, when truth be told, it has many negative effects. Well, 84% of teenagers have smartphones. And what percentage are staying away from the negative effects? I don't know what that is. What are we doing with our use of technology? You know, looking at it rationally, we would say, no, take it away. But we all know the use and the power, the good power of phones and what they can be used for. And so we do use them. Well, back to this, 23% of users meet the criteria of smartphone addiction. And it mirrors substance addiction. It alters brain patterns and brain function. Yes, the effect is that it reduces impulse control by 18%. And withdrawal causes anxiety in 80% of heavy users. How much of our identity and our security is connected to our phones, and how much of it do we just have to have? Withdrawal causes anxiety in 80% of heavy users. Can I take a technology fast, and what does that do for you? What else does it do? Well, it changes the structure of the brain in youth. The addiction thins the prefrontal cortex. That is the observed result from a 2017 study, and where they did MRIs on over 100 teens. 4+ hours a day are linked to delayed brain maturation. You know, science tells us that the male brain matures after they're in their 20s, and that's why, yes, even teens are still given parents, and some of us young men still finished growing up after we were married, and our wife could probably testify to that. But how much more is maturation hindered by the use of the phone, and how much of us express immaturity by the effect of our phones? Well, we also are told that it correlates with 20% higher risk of future ADHD. So we realized that using phones 2+ hours a day has a negative effect. The World Health Organization, the guidelines are that you wouldn't use your phone more than 2 hours a day. So are we willing to back our screen time down to increase the profitability and less negative effect? Well, yes, there are a variety of things we could do. What else do apps do that is negative? Apps disconnect us from real relationships as we absorb ourselves in the pursuit of knowledge and power available on our phone. And we communicate with people abroad. It can easily disconnect us to the people who are next to us. The children that are around our table, how many times do they get neglected because dad is at the end of the table in the presence of all of his children and yet far, far away, involved in some other conversation? Yes, we need to be present with our families at the table. I think it's one of the reasons God designed mealtime together. It becomes us and our screens instead of us and the people that are in front of us. Also, number 8, apps desensitize us from the simple joys of life. We talked about the joys of together time. Also, the joys of the beauty of creation. We're no longer mesmerized by the sunrise or the sunset or the stars above because we're distracted by. Also, we have moments of joy and blessing that we're being robbed of. Apps encourage an unhealthy, sedentary lifestyle. You know, I don't have energy to get up and go anymore. I just want to sit and be entertained. And so the conclusion of this area is that apps, like many other things, can take us away from God and His plan for us. And we've looked at the negative effects. Hopefully that's not too negative, but they can defile and destroy the good God intends us to experience in life. What is some guidance? Well, turn with me to Ephesians 5. Do you want to open the Bible? How much time do we have? What time do you usually close the sermon, Lukey?
20 after.
All right. Take your time. Cool. That's in a few minutes. We'll try to wrap it up as soon as we can. We like to read some here. The Bible was written a long time before smartphones existed. So it doesn't directly address smartphones, but it has many principles that we can use that I believe can help us to think through some of these things. Ephesians 5, verse 1. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. Who are we following? Yes, on our apps, we have the ability to follow people. Is it taking us away from following God? Just one of probably the most important principle. I'll read on to verse 20. And walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be ye not therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, looking around, aware of the dangers that we face, not as fools, but as wise. Here's another pertinent one, 16. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. There's a lot of different principles taught in these verses that we won't even have time to cover them. But there are two groups of people here that are mentioned, and we mentioned the followers of God. Followers of God and followers of disobedience. And I believe that our phones have the ability to take us into either one of these groups, following God or following children of disobedience. What voices are we listening to? I don't know how many of you, because of your phones, have the ability to listen to podcasts, people presenting their truth. And sometimes their truth isn't wrong, but it's not God's truth. We mentioned in Sunday school the voices of psychology and the good of mankind, but is not necessarily the good of God. We make choices and we live in one group or another. Principles. Principle number one, guard your heart and mind. It's also in Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Yes, weed your feed ruthlessly. Think about the apps, how you use them, and the voices. Does it line up with truth? And be willing and even be quick to get rid of some apps. As I've used different apps, there's times when I say, you know what? That app is a negative influence on my life, and it's time to go. Unfollow friends that stir envy, anger, lust, despair. It's just a lot of different things that we need to choose. If our phone apps are having a negative effect, just cut it off. It's time for that to go. You know, there's many apps that when I did that, I didn't even miss their input. I didn't even miss them. It was like I forgot I even used that app and followed this person or that voice, because there are many, many voices, and there are many good voices that can way overfill our life with truth and knowledge that's good. It's just a matter of finding them. And maybe if you're a youth and you can't seem to find good input, which is probably not an issue, but you can get some input, like who should I listen to and who is an encouragement? Where can I go? Yes, Philippians 4:8 also has direction for us. Whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, good. If there's any virtue, if there are any praise, think on these things. Does my scrolling meet Paul's content filter? He gives us directives for that, Philippians 4:8. I believe many apps can motivate us with inspirational content, and so we need to make a choice to guard our heart and mind. Also, secondly, flee idolatry and addiction. An Old Testament concept in Exodus 23, you shall have no other gods before me, and it's even lifted higher than that. We should love God. And there are things that take away our love for God in our pursuit of other goals, and we need to just take away the things. Yes, the things that create addiction, distracting us from the more important things. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient, Paul said. I will not be dominated by things that are not expedient. There are apps that aid us in our search for truth and knowledge of God, and there are also apps that take us into idolatry and addiction. What's another principle? Love your neighbor. You say, well, how does that apply? How many of you, when you drive, like to glance at the person opposing you in the opposite lane of travel? And how many of those people are looking down at their phone? It's like they saw the trajectory of where you're headed, and in the meantime, they realize they can look down. Is it loving your neighbor to look at your phone when you're driving? We know that PA, and I don't know, probably New York as well, hands-free driving, hands on the wheel, cannot have your phone. It is not being considerate of yourself or your family to endanger your life using your phone, texting, or looking at it. Aside from the maps, we know, of course, some of that is necessary. Love your neighbor. Well, that applies in many different ways. Loving your neighbor, we talked about time at the table. That's also the opportunities to not allow our phones to distract us from important communication that needs to happen face-to-face. How many times have you been involved in a meaningful conversation and the person suddenly just exited because their phone was more important? And you realize that I thought I was having a meaningful conversation and I thought this was important, and suddenly realized that I mean nothing. This person was taken away by their phone, and what that says in relationships. Love your neighbor. Redeem the time. Verse 16. So much here that we could talk about, but proper use of time, there's things that we realize that, you know what, there's nothing wrong with this app, but it just takes up so much of my time that it's taking hours that I could be using on more meaningful things. Yes, even how often should we look at our phone to check our apps? How many times do you pick up your phone just to check if you have a notification? Maybe it's time to learn to batch check. Look every hour. Or if I know that something important is coming in, that I do give attention to that every 15 minutes, give a little attention, but just because my phone buzzes doesn't mean I have to pick it up and be distracted. Redeeming the time. Yes, apps empower us for productive use of time, and if used properly, your phone and the apps can greatly reduce the cost of time and increase productive use of your time, but it can also go the other way. Redeeming the time is important. To everything there is a time and a season. I believe that there is a time to gather in the house of God to worship God. And I have no problem that your phones are in your pockets. That had probably a good reason as of being in the city, but there's also some of us that at times have no reason to take our phone into worship. And there's no reason to be taking pictures during a service or to be distracted by our apps. When the Word of God is being presented or being taught, there is a time to worship God and to fulfill the Sabbath rest by shelving our apps. Also, sixthly, pursue purity and cut off apps with offensive content. I mentioned that earlier, at least part of it, but Job 31:11, I have made a covenant with my eyes that it would not look on. And so I believe that there are things that pop up, and sometimes if it is an app that brings a repeating offense, it is time to eliminate it. And we don't always know when we get an app what we're going to find there. But certainly encourage just the ability or making the choice to get rid of the offending apps on our phone. Freedom is found by saying no to the sin that binds us. And so to find freedom in our apps, we need to, at times, cut them off. Well, back to the question, how many apps does a man need? What is your answer to that? We could ask the question, how many apps did your dad have at your age? For most of us, that would be none. But practically, how many do we need? Well, sometimes less is more. As we scroll through 150 apps trying to find the 20 that we actually use, maybe it's time just to get rid of the baggage that slows us down. Take the time to go through and pick, keep the ones you want to keep and delete the unused apps. What else? Well, just because I can doesn't mean I should. And it's, I think Paul gave us that principle, that what is lawful isn't necessarily expedient. Everybody wants you to download and use their free app, but just because it's free doesn't mean it won't cost you anything. Well, there's a lot more we could talk about. I believe that God's Word gives us principles to consider as we think about this subject. My prayer for you is that you would apply the principles from Ephesians 5 and the many other principles that we find in the Bible to approach this practical thing that we face in 2026. What is the path that Jesus would take in 2026? And am I following him to make the choices as the path unfolds before us? Well, let's continue to do that in our personal lives, and God bless you.